It's the bonus week 15 edition of the Horse and Round podcast. Of course, we had a pregame edition that aired before the Broncos win over the Colts, and now the postgame edition for the weekend. So you may be listening on Orange and Blue 760, or you may be listening on DenverBroncos.com. Either way, welcome. Thanks for joining me. I'm Andrew Mason, a first and 10 at 10. You can hear me every weekday from 10 to noon. My co-host, or one of my co-hosts, Ryan Edwards, along with Steve Atwater. Ryan is here with me, filling in for Andy Lindahl. Ryan, good to have you here in the Mothership KOA studio where we crank this out every week.
Yeah, good to be here. I've wanted to do this with you for a little bit, so thanks for the invite.
Hey, you know what? In a couple of weeks, in the end of the regular season, we're going to be sitting in these very same spots for the first hour of the Broncos pregame show because you'll be filling in for David Treadwell, who I've done the first hour with for quite a few years now.
Yeah, looking forward to that. It's going to be on the 31st as we head into the final game of the season.
So, good to have you here, and good news for the Broncos, of course, with the win, but then some bad news, unfortunate news for Trevor Siemian. His season is over. Vance Joseph confirmed that on Friday afternoon. He has a shoulder subluxation, so basically that's kind of a partial dislocation of the shoulder. His season is done. We don't know who the quarterback is going to be for Week 16 in Washington. That is up for debate. Kind of interesting how Vance Joseph framed it, talked about wanting to get a look at Paxton Lynch at some point to see what he has. So there's going to be some conversations about that over the next few days at Broncos headquarters to decide whether it's going to be Brock Osweiler or Paxton Lynch. They're both healthy. Osweiler had an exemplary game Thursday night. No question about it, coming in for Trevor Siemian. I thought his best play, not only as a Bronco, but as a pro, stepping in, 147.7 passer rating. But not just that, the decisions he was making, the ability to get the safeties and look them off and get them in the wrong position, downfield throws, the pass to Jeff Heirman for the touchdown, the pass to Cody Latimer for the touchdown, the decision to scramble for the 18-yard score, see the opening, make the commitment to take off, dive over the goal line. That got the entire sideline fired up. So it's going to be an interesting choice because, yes, the Broncos are out of it for the playoffs. They're not going anywhere in that regard, but they have some momentum. They've done some good things, and Brock Osweiler did some good things in that appearance against Indianapolis. So it'll be fascinating to see what Vance Joseph ultimately decides to do heading into this Washington game at quarterback.
Yeah, I guess it depends on what school of thought you're going into this game with, really, because I could say that if you start Brock Osweiler, you're probably trying to get the win. If you're starting Paxton Lynch, it doesn't mean you're not trying to win, but it also means you're looking at more of the evaluation process. And if you start Paxton Lynch against Washington, you're likely starting him the following week against Kansas City. And that would be the direction I'd like to see them go. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see it be Paxton Lynch because you still have to decide, have some pretty major decisions when it comes to the quarterback and your depth. I mean, look, you go into this offseason, you've got three quarterbacks on roster, and then you got a decision if you want to try to bring back Brock Osweiler. We have an understanding through multiple reports, through just logic, that they're going to probably look into free agency. They're probably going to look into the draft. So, and you can't go into camp with five or six quarterbacks, so there's got to be some decisions made. And right now, it's an incomplete grade on Paxton Lynch's career. There's nothing else you can say about it. You just don't know enough. So what I'd like to see is Paxton get some time. Now, Vance didn't rule out in his press conference that aired the day following the game, didn't rule out the notion of starting one and playing the other. So say starting Brock Osweiler and possibly playing Paxton Lynch.
Remember, that was discussed going into Week 17 of last year,
right,
against Oakland, starting Trevor Siemian and playing Paxton Lynch, and maybe you revisit that original idea and go with it in Washington to get a look at both of them, to, you know, get Brock Osweiler out there because he has some momentum, but also get a long look at Paxton Lynch. Maybe that's the way to go about this. And in regards to Paxton Lynch, if you did decide, okay, we're going to play him, maybe you have to think of it in much the same way that the then Houston Oilers thought of things with Steve McNair at the end of the 1995 and 96 seasons, putting him out there at the end of the season to get his time on the field and start finding out about him.
Well, the fact is, when it comes to Paxton Lynch, he's got to show more. And that goes into a lot of different things specifically about his play. That said, the guy that's come in behind the starter has been playing very well lately, if you include Trevor Siemian's fourth quarter performance against the Oakland Raiders, and then, of course, the Colts' performance for Brock Osweiler. The backup quarterback might actually have a little bit of spark.
So maybe that would augur well if you started yeah. Brock Osweiler and put Paxton Lynch in, and Paxton Lynch could go out there and turn up. Remember, Paxton Lynch, actually, you could say, his best performance was probably when he came in
Tampa Bay
of Trevor Siemian at Tampa Bay last year.
No doubt about it. So that would be sort of a fascinating twist to this. And then again, you know, when we break it down on first and 10 at 10, what are we going to say then? Like, this team seems to do better when their best quarterback is coming off the bench. That's not really a necessary way
Jim
that you
Tracy
can win games.
Did try that with the Rockies back in 2012? You handcuffed a specific relief pitcher to a specific starter, and you were trying to shorten the rotation. And so that starter would only go, I think, 75 pitches.
Yes.
So
75. That was the number.
75, that's it. Make the change.
Yep. Yeah, it was one of the more obnoxious things I've ever seen in baseball. It drove me absolutely insane. You'd have a guy pitching well into the fifth or sixth inning at 75 pitches, and they just say, you know what? I know it's a shutout, but we got to get this guy out of there. We got to limit his number of pitches. And that is just simply not a winning recipe, really.
It was desperate.
Yes, yes,
that's
it was desperate,
it was.
And it was overthinking it. And again, the Broncos aren't going to do this. Like, if they're doing this in these final two games, it's only on the idea of evaluation. That's it. And really, you got to evaluate the guys that are going to be under contract next year. You know that Paxton Lynch is going to probably be on the roster next year. And so you got to evaluate him somehow. Now, Vance Joseph said he's healthy. That was kind of something that piqued my ear a little bit because he has not practiced the last couple of weeks. And it was a 2 to 4 week kind of high ankle injury.
So you're right in that wheelhouse right now.
You're right in the middle of it. But then again, he said he's healthy. So I guess he kind of has to be, because if he's not healthy, you have to go out and grab somebody else, because obviously you're not going to go into a game with Jordan Taylor as your backup.
But he said at his press conference on Friday, they're probably not going to sign another quarterback. So that's it. It's going to be Paxton Lynch and Brock Osweiler as your two quarterbacks
for the remainder of the year.
Washington.
Yeah, and likely for the remainder of the year, unless there's some kind of freak injury.
Then you'd have to sign somebody out of necessity. Then it's just, okay, whoever you can find off the scrap heap. And for people who will inevitably ask, if there was an injury to Lynch or Osweiler, no, it cannot be Chad Swag Kelly.
He's on IR.
You cannot activate him from IR. He was on the non-football injury list. They had a window that they could have brought him onto the 53-man roster, but he had not recovered to the point where the Broncos felt good enough about bringing him back, so he reverted back to IR. His season was done at that point. It's all about 2018 for Kelly.
Another thing that came out of that was interesting in Vance Joseph's press conference is that D'Angelo Henderson might have a shot at playing in these final two games, something that a lot of fans and some media, too, have been calling for a little bit. You know, a hope of seeing that rookie. I mean, the fact is, last night you had four healthy, inactive draft picks. And
you had six active, undrafted rookies.
It's a great counter. It's a great counter. And I don't have an issue with it. Personally, I don't have an issue. I'm just saying it's interesting. That's all. It's just interesting. And look, you know, the scouting department, you know, the way that they, you can't just judge them on draft picks. You got to judge them on everything. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you're right. You have six undrafted guys that are dressing for the game. That should also be talked about in a positive light. And just because you have four healthy, inactive draft picks, it doesn't mean those guys are busts. It doesn't mean those guys can't play. It just means that in this game plan, where the Broncos are currently at, what they thought was gave them the best chance to win, the guys that have been practicing the best and playing the best, those guys gave them the best opportunity, and they played a healthy complement of snaps. But I'd like to see D'Angelo Henderson. I really would. He showed some really nice promise in the preseason and in training camp. He was definitely a standout player, and we've all heard it. It's important to get in-game reps.
And Jamal Charles only played two snaps last night and did not touch the ball. Or two snaps on Thursday night, I should say. We're recording this on Friday, just so you know.
I had done a pretty good job up to this point about not being definitive on
usually my... Usually I do a good job as well, but sometimes it just seeps in there. Of course, I can go back and edit this.
That's right. That's right. But yeah, anyways,
Jamal Charles on Thursday night, two snaps, no touches. And if that's the case, then you should probably have D'Angelo Henderson up and playing to see what he has. And, hey, he's got fresh legs at this point as well. Although C.J. Anderson, even though he doesn't have the freshest legs because he's had the had more snaps, more carries, more touches than any other running back in that room, he looked pretty spry Thursday night. And now with C.J. Anderson, you're looking at not only what's best for the team, but also can you get him 142 yards and get him a 1,000-yard season? I think something like that matters as well. We've talked about with Demaryius Thomas getting him the 90 catches and 1,000 yards. I think now there's an opportunity to get C.J. Anderson to that milestone as well. And look, these things do matter, especially in a season that's kind of gone astray. You're trying to find things that you can cling to, positives that you can take going into the offseason. And if you could get a 1,000-yard season for C.J. Anderson and a season that allows Demaryius Thomas to keep his streaks alive, then those are some things that you can carry forward into the offseason. And also, if the defense can continue its form of the last couple weeks. And look, they're number one in total defense right now.
Right.
And certainly that's a goal. Darian Stewart told us that on Monday when he joined us on First and 10, how that's something that they're thinking about quite a bit, that they want to finish at the top of the league in total defense, and they're on track to get there right now.
Going back to CJ and Demaryius Thomas, it's just it's such an important message you sent to the locker room, too, that we're going to take care of our guys.
Yes.
Demaryius Thomas is a no-doubt coming back guy next year, important to this team. CJ Anderson has proven multiple times to be important to this team. But again, you know, these things get worked out in the offseason, where his contract's at, what they might want to do. I mean, he's due $4.5 million next year. You may take a look at that. There's opportunities to possibly restructure, but the message you send to the rest of the locker room is we're going to take care of these guys because they want to see. Look, that offensive line would love to see C.J. Anderson have a 1,000-yard season because they get credit for that,
too. It's a point of pride for them.
Yes, of course. And then Demaryius Thomas, you said it perfectly. I mean, you know, this is a guy that's going to go to, he's a bona fide, no doubt, Ring of Famer for the Broncos. He's going to go down one of the best all-time receivers, and he's on the bit of a nice roll right now streak-wise, and they've had such up-and-down years on offense. You'd like to see him get his, and I think it's very possible.
And I think for C.J. Anderson, looking at his Broncos career, as a guy who came in undrafted in 2013, he's got a Pro Bowl appearance that he had because he did so well in the back half of 2014, even though he was on the bench the first half of that season, that he managed to get to the Pro Bowl despite really just being a half-season guy. And then he had that run leading up to Super Bowl 50. It wasn't spectacular, but moving the chains, you know, keeping the line moving on offense, that sort of thing. We allude to it on Friday morning that the Broncos are 12-0 when he has 20-plus carries, including in Super Bowl 50. That mattered. Remember the touchdown run he had that basically sealed the game?
Yep.
And he's just carrying guys on his back. We saw him carry Coney Ealy on his back. And, hey, a little bit of a flashback to Super Bowl 50 because Coney Ealy, of course, was in the Super Bowl playing for Carolina at the time. And he was back there for the Jets on Sunday, and C.J. Anderson's carrying him. So, you know, things kind of come back a little bit from time to time. But, it would be good for him in the context of his greater Broncos career to have that. And he was on his way to a 1,000-yard season in 2016 before he had the knee injury as well. So some of it is beyond his control. But for him in his career, I would like to see that 1,000-yard season next to his name to really validate his place in Broncos history.
Completely agree. He's already got a career high this year in 858 yards after that performance against the Colts. I mean, with C.J. Anderson, it's going to be interesting in an offseason conversation that we'll get into about what the running back room should look like. Because we know Devontae Booker is going to be here. We know D'Angelo Henderson is going to be here. Jamaal Charles is on the one-year contract. We'll see what they end up doing there. But I could see a conversation happening where you take a look at C.J. Anderson. If he can stay healthy for the entirety of this year, which he has played in all the games, I can see the conversation. They win with him. They win with him. And they win when he gets better as the game goes along. So the conversation should be had. Now, what would he garner, you know, if you trade him or if you release him? I mean, all those things have to come into play. But, you know, running backs, I don't think it's a slam dunk. I think if he finishes out, gets to the 1,000 yards, is productive in these final two games against Washington, Kansas City, and gives them a chance to win games, you know, it's amazing. We came into this final stretch saying there's a lot of evaluation. There's a lot of decisions that have to be made. And guys performances could dictate one way or the other. Spent a lot of time on Cody Latimer, thinking about what he could bring if he continues to play at the level he's playing. CJ Anderson could find his way into that conversation. And again, what he's doing now, also the other teams around the league are going to take notice too.
We talk about it, I refer to it as salvage.
Yes.
Because there are a lot of fans, especially when the team was sitting at 3-9, we were hearing from them on air, we were getting texts, we were getting tweets, burn it all down.
Right.
So I even got one email that said, kill it with fire, borrowing something that we say on air at time. And I'm thinking, no. Because the teams that have had the quickest rebuilds have been the ones that have been able to kind of salvage players, concepts, ideas from a bad season.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not about clear-cutting and just gutting it all and starting over. It's finding out which players, which ideas, which things can help you going forward and ensure that this is just a one-year thing. And that's why you see the way Cody Latimer is playing. His contract is expiring, but is he a guy that can help you in the future because of the way he's trending? You take his numbers since he became the number three receiver, and that would translate to about 32, 33 catches, over 500 yards.
Which
in the
is perfect.
Of the season. For a number three receiver,
yeah,
that's fine. That'll do.
Yeah, no question about it. So guys along the offensive line, Cody Latimer, there are plenty of guys defensively. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's plenty of guys, and that's part of it. Speaking of guys that are proving some things, how about Billy Musgrave?
Oh, wow.
Billy Musgrave, you know, you talk about, you know, using the same personnel, but changing some things. We're seeing a lot more two-back sets. Andy Janovich played more snaps than he's played all season long.
A lot of two tight end sets.
We even see some three tight end sets. You know, and what he's doing is he's taking the players he has, he's making them perform at a level that they hadn't been since early in the year. And I got to say, right now, you know, he seems like the obvious, not just because he has ties here locally, but he has ties to John, Mr. Elway.
Well, his experience plays into that. He's been an offensive coordinator before. He's worked with quarterbacks. And look, the quarterback position is going to take on a different form one way or the other going into next year. And so I would think you would want kind of a quarterback guru like Bill Musgrave there in charge of the offense. There's a lot that he would bring to that. Ask Oakland right now about their offense, and it's been clunky at times. Clearly, the Raiders miss Bill Musgrave. So I think their season turns out different if they don't let him go. And that's sometimes you kind of think about it in that prism. You know, he was somewhere else. What did they lose when he was gone? And Oakland lost quite a bit. And you also look at some of the influences on Bill Musgrave. You know, he had that year in Philadelphia as quarterback coach under Chip Kelly. I think that comes in handy as well because that gives a lot, that exposed him to a lot of different concepts. And you see the occasional Chip Kelly concept seeping in, especially in the game plan with Paxton Lynch. There were some Chip Kelly stuff in Oakland. Again, that game didn't work out as you wanted, but they were able to incorporate some different things. And a lot of that is because Bill Musgrave has a background in some different concepts.
And it's also good if he ends up being the guy because he's now worked with the quarterbacks on this roster.
Yes.
He knows what their strengths and weaknesses are, and he can legitimately tell the coaching staff, this is the kind of quarterback I need. And whether or not these guys represent, you know, that kind of future here or not. And you know, that's a valuable voice. And I think that's one that John Elway would really appreciate. So would Vance Joseph. And you know, I think that you're also looking at, you know, the way this team has turned the corner a little bit. That for me shouldn't be, you know, glossed over whatsoever. They went on the 8-game losing streak. They were playing about as bad as football in all three phases at times, even though defensively the stats still prove out that this is a top-tier defense, you know, scoring defense, which a lot of times was put in bad position by the offense or special teams. The numbers weren't good there either. So all three phases were being affected, and somehow it just flipped. They went into the Jets game. They had a good game plan. They played sound football in all phases. And it seems like, you know, when we go back and look at the end of the season and we're thinking about this team, you know, you're going to say you're probably not going to have as negative feel about the team as we did just a few weeks ago.
Shane Ray talked about it Thursday night. He talked about how this team has something to build on because of what it's done the last couple of games. The narrative has changed. The feeling has changed. Look, it was important to get at least one win. It would have been disastrous to go into the offseason with a 12-game losing streak. I mean, there were some fans out there that could have said, oh, tank, lose them all. Oh, my goodness. No, 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 no.
Because you forget how to win.
Yeah.
You forget what it's like.
And that thing would have been an anvil hanging over this organization throughout the entire offseason, kind of like, you know, like Wile E. Coyote or something. You know, it just would have been, you know, lingering over them.
Well, and the fan uproar to make wide sweeping changes.
Yes.
You know, the crowd that's saying blow it all up and do all, you know, fire all these people. That voice would have gained a bit of credence, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. That would have gained a little bit of steam. And so you're absolutely right. You had to win one, and then there were some people saying, well, now that you won one, don't win anymore. And it's like, no, that's still not what you do organizationally. Organizationally, you go into the game. You don't tell the players, or you don't set them up for failure. You tell the players, go out and execute. You want to be here next year? Mm-hmm. Show me. You want to be in the league next year? Show me. That's what you got to do. And that's what a good organization does. And that's why the Broncos were never, ever in the mindset to tank.
Yeah. In spite of what some people wanted.
Well, and that's, I think it's a short-sighted view. In my opinion, and that's me being gentle, but I'm saying it's a short-sighted view.
It's also something you can take from, you can say from a distance. If you're in the locker room, if you're around the locker room, it's not something that you'd have. So it's a matter of perspective. And look, the high draft pick guarantees nothing. And Denver is also already at the point where, no matter how many wins they get the rest of the season, if they want to go up, if they decide we have to go up to number two or even number one to get a player that we want in the draft,
you can trade.
You can do that. It is now reasonable to do that.
Yes.
Whereas you go back to 2016,
mm-hmm.
remember John Elway kind of joking about Carson Wentz and
yes.
said basically from 32.
Well, he liked him.
Yeah, from 32 to where you'd have to go to get him, it would have cost way too much.
Yeah. We're talking about 3 years, so almost setting your team back two to three years of drafts. But if there's a guy you love, I mean, you know, we were talking about Josh Allen for a little bit earlier this week because of Todd McShay's mock draft. He's tall, he's got a big arm, and, you know, he's got a lot of intangibles that you like about him. And, you know, he might even be a little bit more polished than Paxton in the sense of a developmental project. I don't know if he'd be the same level. So if you really love Josh Allen, if John Elway really loves him, mm-hmm. he could trade into the top five to go get him if he wanted.
It'll be interesting. I mean, I think the coaching of Craig Bowl factors into that as
mm-hmm.
well. But, you know, he hasn't turned pro yet, even though there's a lot of reports out there and rumors, and we'll see how that ends up bearing out. But certainly the quarterback position and in the draft, that's something we're going to talk quite a bit about on future editions of First and Ten at 10, for future editions of the podcast. For now, we've got Mike Chappell, longtime Colts beat writer and Hall of Fame voter. That's the key thing, talking about some of the ins and outs of the Hall of Fame voting process. Of course, in particular, our own Steve Atwater. He's a semifinalist. We'll find out in a couple of weeks if he made the cut to the finalist. And Pat Mullen, of course, he has to go through the Contributors Committee. So those things are in place. So obviously the Broncos on the minds of Hall of Fame voters. And we checked in with Mike Chappell to find out about the process. And here's that interview that we had with him earlier this week.
And bring on Mike Chappell, covers the Colts out in Indianapolis, has been doing that for a very long time. You can find him on Twitter at mchappell51. Mike, good morning. You're on with Ryan Edwards, Andrew Mason, and Steve Atwater. What's going on, man?
Hey, Mr. Chappell.
How you guys doing? How you guys doing?
All right.
We're doing great. Of course, we like to start with the Hall of Fame, as it turns out. We wanted to have you on for a multitude of reasons, but one of them, of course, is to talk a little about the Hall of Fame and,
sure.
you know, a bit of sort of your process when you go through taking a look at who you try to assist along the way to be inducted.
Yeah, we had it's a long process. I think we have 48 voters, and we get a big long list of 125 people. We whittle it down to like 50. Now we've got a list of 25 or 27 actually that we whittle down to 15. That vote's due in tomorrow. And the 15, we get the list. It'll be announced in early January. And that's the list that we, along with the senior and the contributor, that we will have. We meet the day before the Super Bowl in Minneapolis, and we'll talk for probably 8 or 9 hours. Talk is a soft word. We debate, sometimes heated, And from the 15, you vote for five modern era guys, and then the you vote on the contributor and the senior. And the next day, or that night at the award show, we'll announce who gets in this year. So it's a long process, but everybody takes it really, really serious because you're deciding guys' legacies one way or the other. So
yeah,
it's we all take it very serious.
How tough is it getting in that room every year? It seems like there are more qualified, deserving candidates, not only among the 15, but even among guys that don't make the finalist list, than you're able to get in on a year-to-year basis.
What's always is interesting is no sooner will the list come out that this is a class of 2018, will people say, well, how did you leave out this guy? So then what you'd say is, well, who would you have left off? Well, I don't want to leave anybody off. Well, no, that's not the way it works. If you're gonna argue that you want this guy in, which of the five guys are you gonna take out? So it's difficult. And if I've heard, well, let's expand it. Let's get, to sort of get the backlog out. Let's have 10 in this year. If you do that, then the 11th or 12th guy will be. It's kind of like in the playoff Final Four in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got four, the fifth and sixth teams are gonna be left out. If you had eight, number 9 and 10 will be married. So it's a tough, but what's getting difficult is, at least from the skill positions, we've been comparing players from different eras. Andre Reed's and people like even Tim Brown. And nowadays, guys with 1,000, 1,100 catches and, X number of yards, they're somewhat inflated by the fact that this game is a passing league now. So we've got, 2 years ago, Terrell Owens was up for the first time, didn't get in last year. So this year you got Randy Moss, we've got Isaac Bruce and Torrey Holt. In the years to come, we're going to have Reggie Wayne and Fitzgerald and Calvin Johnson. It's just hard. And you've got offensive linemen that they've been trying to get in, the Joe Jacobys and Kevin Mawai and Carl Mecklenburg, people like that. It's just so hard to argue in how the difficulty I've always had is how you argue. And then you've got the coaches. You've got Jim Johnson and Don Corio. It's hard enough to bait an offensive guard with a safety, one of those sitting next to you right there, with receivers, and then you throw a coach in there. It's just, I've always thought they should have a different category for coaches, because I'm always going to lean towards a player unless we're talking about a Bill Belichick, unless it's a slam dunk, because I lean towards players.
Right, right. Hey, Mike, Steve Atwater, how are you today, sir?
Good, how are you?
Good, good. Hey, I wanted to ask, in your opinion, do most of the voters kind of have in their mind, I'm sure they have in their mind, but do they have their minds made up when they go in the room to vote? They say, all right, we got a list of 25. All right, I'm going in here and I'm voting for this person and I'm not going to be influenced one way or the other. Or are they open to be influenced by some of the others who are presenting?
That's a good question. I think after being through the process and going from, again, 27 to 15, and you've looked at it and looked at it, I think it's only natural in your mind you have sort of the guys that, you sort of rank who you have, and maybe you have a pretty good idea who you're going to the room in favor of. But I would certainly hope that you're open to discussion. That's what that 7, 8, 9 hours is. It's back and forth. It's why he should, why he shouldn't. Anyone that goes into that room and says, at 7:30 in the morning, whatever it is, and says, these are my five and nothing I hear is going to change my mind, that I don't think they're doing their job. I've had guys that have gotten in that I wasn't in favor of initially.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to me, when they get to the final five and everyone sort of has pared it down, then when you get to the final five, all you're doing is voting yes or no.
Mm-hmm.
I would need a real, real good reason to vote no on somebody who makes it to the final five. And it's happened rarely, but it has happened. But like to your point, if you walk in that room and kind of like you're on the jury, and this, you know, you've made your mind up before you even heard evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Then what are you doing there? So I would hope everyone is open enough. And again, there have been guys that people have changed my mind, and there's some guys that people haven't changed my mind on. But I thought, this guy's a very, very good player, but not a Hall of Famer. And the sad part is, when guys don't get in, it's almost like you're criticizing his career.
Mm-hmm.
And that shouldn't be the point. I mean, guys have had, you know, it's no shame to have an almost Hall of Fame career. And I realize that it's that next step that players want. But, again, to your point, I would hope people are open enough. And it's going to, you know, once again, it's going to be very interesting on Terrell Owens. It's going to be very interesting on Randy Moss. The safety group is deep again.
Yeah.
So I look forward to it, and I expect some spirited conversation once again.
All right, one more question. I want to ask about the safeties in particular. What criteria, I don't know if you can share this with me or not, but what would you say the criteria is? Is it tackles? Is it interceptions? Is it just the on the field play, or is it other things in addition to that? What all goes into the decisions in voters' minds, or at least in your mind?
The impact the player had. Was he the all-around guy? Was he just a thumper? Was he a cover guy? You know, and it always comes up with Pro Bowls and All-Pros and, to some degree, Super Bowls and playoffs. And I don't think it's any secret that one of the reasons, one of the really overriding reasons that, like, Terrell Davis got in with his short career was he was just off the charts in the playoffs in the Super Bowl. So all of that figures in. Off the field stuff in this group, I don't know that there's anything to worry about, but off the field stuff does not matter. It really is not supposed to matter if you've had whatever with the law or whatever. It's about what you do. So it's the all-around player. Did you play along? Did you make a difference? Did you sort of set the tone? Did you make players around you better? And that's why the safety position, for whatever reason, it's almost like the special teams guys, the punters and the kickers.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to get guys in. I don't know why that is. I really don't. John Lynch has been up, you know, been trying to get in for, I don't know, whatever it is, in the last 5 or 6 years. And it's just Brian Dawkins is now in the mix, and there's going to be, you know,
Troy Polamalu, the guys joining that mix.
And then we're going to have Ed Reed coming up in a year or two.
Yep.
So they will. But the problem is then when they come up, if we don't get a safety in this year, which I think there will be one this year, but if you don't, then when you get Reed and you get Polamalu, do they push guys back another year? I ran into this with Marvin Harrison. I thought Marvin Harrison was a first ballot Hall of Famer. I just did. And I lobbied for him. I spoke up for him at the meeting. And there was a backlog. There was Andre Reed. There was Tim Brown, and on and on. So you, in some instances, you sort of have to wait your turn. So we'll see if that happens. But again, when you tell a player, not face to face, but by your actions, you tell a player that you need to wait sort of your turn, and then you get an Ed Reed and you get a Polamalu. And sometimes the players who play more recently get more credence, I guess, than guys who played a while ago, just because they're fresher in your mind. That's one reason that they want, you know, you have to be out 5 years before you're considered, because they don't want that immediate reaction of a guy's career to influence the body of work and all that. So, again, people think we just get in there and throw darts on the board, and that's not the case.
Yeah, I know that's not the case. Yeah, you guys, it's a rough job you guys have.
Well, and again, you're trying to – here you are. You're comparing, let's say, a safety to guard or a tackle, you know, and it's with a receiver who's got numbers you can put your hands on. With safeties, you can put your hands on the numbers. It's just difficult. And that's why, again, it's such a long meeting. It's hard to compare almost apples and oranges when you're talking positions.
Interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully, as you're debating those things, Steve Atwater's name stays, firmly in the mix on what you're trying to.
The whole thing is to get your name in the room, to get to the final 15. You know, I'm a big Edgerrin Games fan, and mm-hmm. it's important to get your name in the room so you're in the discussion, and you're not that guy that in 10 or 15 or 20 years you're the guy that slipped through the cracks and then you're relying on the senior committee. So it's important to keep your name in the discussion, get in the room, and eventually, you know, it's like they say, you keep knocking on the door, and then hopefully one year you knock it down.
Big thanks to Mike for checking in with us. That was really some insightful stuff into the process. Neither you nor I, Ryan, are in that room. We'd love to be a fly on the wall in the room, but it's pretty tough given the parameters that they put on. One thing I disagree there, he kind of dismissed the notion of having a bigger class, but I've pushed this. In 2019, the league's 100th season, I would like to see a bigger class. I want to see a one-time 17-person class. 17 is the size of the original Hall of Fame class in 1963. I would like to see that to at least alleviate some of the backlog, and I think that would be an appropriate year to do that.
Yeah, he made the point about how, well, you get to, well, in your, let's say your example, 17, but then the 18th person is going to feel slighted. And then,
but that's like the NCAA tournament. They went from 64 to 68, and team 69 felt slighted.
Yeah, it's always going to be like that, and there's always an understanding of that, but I think you're right. You got a little bit of a backlog, and he made the point about safeties and talking about specifically how you're going to have Ed Reed and Troy Polamalu mm-hmm. and how that might push some other guys back.
Right.
If they don't, you know, he said, I think there's going to be at least one in this year, but again, look at the safety group, and we, of course, we all believe Steve Atwater should be in. He has, even under Mike's sort of definition there, talking about Pro Bowls, talking about performances in Super Bowls.
Steve
Atwater,
my
goodness.
I'm thinking when he's going through those items with Steve Atwater, I'm thinking,
yes.
check.
I thought the same
check.
Thing.
Why isn't Steve in?
I thought the same thing. He's like, well, you got to have Pro Bowls and performances in Super Bowls and rings. And we're like, okay.
This is what we've been arguing.
Yeah, it's all there. There are great performances from Brian Dawkins, you know, John Lynch, who was a local guy. I mean, it is a good safety class, but you make the point, hey, look, that's going to be a backlog. And we already know safety in the Hall of Fame, it's not a very popular category.
It's a mess because it's a hard position to quantify because there are the lack of stats, and it's something that they need to focus on. It maybe it needs to be a concerted effort to saying, okay, look, this is probably the most underrepresented position in the Hall of Fame right now, especially in regards to the last 3.5-4 decades. So this is something that they need to get right because you have clearly qualified candidates. John Lynch should be a Hall of Famer. Brian Dawkins should be a Hall of Famer. Steve Atwater should be a Hall of Famer. Ed Reed and Troy Polamalu. These are all Hall of Fame players. All of these guys belong. No question.
By the way, selfishly, I think it would be a lot of fun for us to be able to do our show out in Canton for a week. I think I wouldn't hate that to be with Hall of Fame inductee Steve Atwater as we're broadcasting live from Canton.
Maybe he'd give you a shout-out.
Well, I did tell him that he's got to say something about the wave. And then at least say something about how I am anti the wave. But yeah,
well, he can say that I'm pro-wave.
Yes, he could.
Mace. You're with me on the wave.
Yeah.
Ryan, you're against it.
It would be spectacular. But if nothing else, just to do the show.
Well, no,
with him.
What he should do is lead if and when he gets in. I'm going to say when.
When?
Because to me, Steve Atwater is a Hall of Famer.
Yes, of course.
He should lead the crowd in the wave.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And they do it.
And they, oh, and Harvey.
Awesome.
Yeah, it would be epic. It would be epic. No, I mean, like that's selfishly. But yes. we're obviously big fans of Steve, not just for his play on the field, but even as a human being.
Oh.
There's really no argument against Steve Atwater in the Hall of Fame.
You'll never meet a kinder person. And he's a tremendous ambassador for the Denver Broncos. It's great having him back in the Broncos organization. It's great having him on our air. And he also gets us great guests like this next guy we had on this week, Eric Dickerson, who joined us to talk a little about the Colts, but mostly about playing running back, quarterback, but also sharing some memories of the late Ron Meyer, former SMU Patriots and Colts coach who passed away a few days ago. Of course, Dickerson and Meyer go all the way back to the late 70s when Meyer was recruiting him. He had a great story about him. So let's give that a listen.
All right, we welcome him to the program. Eric Dickerson joins us now. Eric, you're on with Steve Atwater, Ryan Edwards, and Andrew Mason. Good morning, sir. How are you?
What's up, ED?
Hey.
How you doing, Dad? What's up, Steve? How you doing, man?
Doing good, brother. How you doing?
I'm good. I can't complain, bro.
It's good to have you on, Eric. Yeah. We really appreciate it. We obviously have a bunch of things to get to here, but I wanted to first sort of talk to you about something that we've been discussing with the Broncos, and it's been this season where they're looking for identity on offense, and I've always been curious about that, about how do you, when a team is trying to decide what their identity, they build it off their personnel, their players, is it off the scheme? What's a more effective way to bring about identity on an offense, in your opinion?
Well, it just depends on, you know, what you want to do and what you think you're best at. You know, in our era with the Rams, you know, we were a running football team. I mean, from the time I got there, the Rams were known for having running backs and running football, you know. And you know, when I got there, John Robinson came out of USC. He liked to run the ball, and we were just known to run the football, play great defense, and run the football. You know, some teams that are known for throwing the football a lot. You know, I think about the Patriots. You know, their identity is, you know, Tom Brady putting the ball in the air and playing good defense. When I think about the Broncos, you know, back in when they won the Super Bowl with John Elway before they got TD, you know, they were football team that threw the football a lot, threw it a lot. Then they got TD and it changed it. I mean, so you kind of become your own, have your own identity, what works for you, and you live and die with it. That's what they're like. We run the football. We're going to run today no matter what.
Yeah, for a running back in particular as well, what do you think is most important? Is it just having the raw talent? Is it having the kind of the vision to see things as they open up? Is it intelligence? Is it some combination of all those factors?
Well, so it's a combination of everything you just said. You know, the vision thing, I've never bought into that because, me, I'm blind as a bat. I got glasses. The glasses big. If I take the glasses off, I'm blind.
Hey, those goggles look sweet you used to play in, though, Ed. We should like those,
man. I hate them damn things. because you go by feel and colors on the field as a running back. You know, you can feel a guy closing in on, or you can see the cutback lane coming. You can just feel it. You feel it happen because you see the line moving. You have to have. I mean, I was big on. Because I was fast, so speed was one of my big attributes. I mean, I was fast. I could cut. I mean, I could cut like a little guy being big. Mm-hmm. And acceleration, you know. So every guy has something that works for them. But you know, I think the most important thing is durability, is being able to play hurt. You know, because you got to go against guys like Steve Atwater. You know, to knock you out, and that's every week. You know, you hardly ever play healthy, so you have to be durable. I mean, you have some guys that. Yeah, they're good, but they're not durable. Or, you know, they don't pick up blocks well at the backfield. They don't catch the ball well. So, you know, you have to figure that what works for a back. I mean, whatever works for that guy. You know, for me, it was I was durable. I thought I was fast. Like I said, my vision wasn't great, but I could feel things, and I just went by the feel.
Yeah. So, Ed, you know, we've been having some quarterback issues this year. We've had we've started different quarterbacks on our roster several games. We've made several changes throughout the year. What qualities do you think, in your experience in playing with several quarterbacks, what qualities makes a good quarterback? You know, can lead a team and be successful.
Man, well, yeah, I ain't never had one. I don't know. I have no idea. Can I get one now? Man, you know, honestly, and in all honesty, one thing makes a good quarterback is his confidence. And the best quarterback I played with was Vince Ferragamo. Really, I can say that. My rookie season. Mm-hmm. Vince was a guy that would stand in there, last minute, take the hit. He was a guy on the field you could count on. Like, if you didn't know, you could ask it right quick. He knew it. I won't forget my rookie season. We played the New York Jets down in New York. And we're breaking the huddle, and it's still my aha moment in the National Football League. We're breaking the huddle. The sun's going down. The lights pop on. We got that fog around the top of the stadium. And he said to me, if I don't see anything downfield, I'm coming to you. I said, okay. And sure enough, the rush comes, and all I could see the top of his helmet, that horn going back and forth, looking downfield, the horn going back and forth. And I saw his arm come out over the top, and the ball came to me, and I caught a pass and ran downfield. I was like, wow, this is NFL football. Well, you know, some quarterbacks, they have that, like the Tom Brady has that it factor. You know, Ben Roethlisberger to me has, you know, people may say he's old, you know, getting old, he wants to retire, but he has it, that, and still has it. Aaron Rodgers, he has it. I mean, so it's just certain guys that you know in those moments that you can count on. I mean, really, if you're playing 16 games, pretty much if your quarterback has 13 good weeks or 12 good weeks, you're gonna go somewhere. Yeah. You know, and that's possibly the playoffs. If not, in y'all's situation over there, y'all hurt, man. Y'all ain't going nowhere.
Come on, Ed. Have faith, baby.
I think I can come out of retirement and play quarterback over there.
Come on, Ed. Easy on us, baby.
Good God Almighty. I mean, sheesh. Y'all get rid of the guy and then bring the guy back. What's the guy's name? You say y'all
Brock Osweiler.
Man, they gave him all that money. What the hell were they thinking?
Yeah, well, hey, that was Houston. Houston did, and
Cleveland.
I said, what was Houston thinking? I mean, I'm Brock. I'm Steven.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, well, we're a work in progress, E.D.
It is a work in progress.
Y'all got that great defense. You know, the sad thing is, y'all got all that defense over there. I mean, y'all got a great defense. And, I mean, defense gets tired. I mean, they do. I was thinking about our defense last year. I mean, look, it was all on the defense. The four games we won because of the defense. Trust me, not because of that tired ass offense we ran last year. As you can tell from year to year. I mean, you see, if you don't have no offense, man, it hurts your defense and vice versa.
Right.
That's awesome.
So obviously you're identifying with the Rams when you say we, right?
Of course.
Okay.
Of course.
I'm about to say because the Colts.
Man, please. I played for the Colts, but
Right.
We're chatting here with Hall of Famer Eric Dickerson. You know, going back to running backs for just a moment, what do you think about when you watch guys like Le'Veon Bell and the way the stylistically and how, you know, different guys have sort of changed a little bit of the way that position runs a little bit?
Well, and that's a really good question because every guy has his own style. I mean, they really do. A guy just asked me, you know, with Le'Veon Bell running ball, could I do that? I'm like, I couldn't do that. I mean, I couldn't stop and start. I mean, like that, you know, kind of shuffle your feet. That's not me. It was perfect for him. And, you know what makes it work for him? Your offensive line, they know you. They know how he runs. Mm-hmm. They know that they have to hold their block longer. One thing, when we ran the football at the Rams, John Robinson knew one thing about me. If this playmate designed to go to the right, but I might go all the way back across the field. So the guys had to hold their block. So the offensive line knows that you like it. You know what they can do. You know, like, okay, my guard, he's not good at one-on-one blocking straight ahead. But if I get him on open space, right, he's great at that. He can pull and he can run. So you know the strength of each guy, and they know what you do.
Right.
Now, coming, obviously, you're more of a Ram than a Colt, as you said, but coming to Indianapolis, you did get to be reunited with the late Ron Meyer, who was your coach at SMU. What did Coach Meyer mean to you, not only as a player, but also as a man?
Man, I love Coach Meyer. I mean, when I say that was a hard loss, that was a hard and shocking loss for me because I just saw Coach Meyer a year ago. He had sent me a message for my birthday in September that they played at my birthday party for me because he couldn't be there. Man, it just meant a lot to me to know him. I mean, I think about I've known Coach Meyer since I was 18 years old. He recruited me out of Sealy, Texas, came to my house, and right after Barry Switzer came to the house, Coach Meyer came. My mother, when Barry Switzer left, I told him I was committed to coming. She told him when he walked out, she said, "You're not going to school yet." And I'm like, oh, my gosh. So when Ron Meyer came in a couple of days later, he was talking, and I'll never forget how he got my mom, my mother. He was talking about, you know, going to school, and he said, "You know what? I'm kind of hungry. Y'all have anything around here to eat? Can you got a thing to cook up?" And she said, "Sure." She goes in, cooks some chicken and I already had some greens and stuff in there, and he's sitting there and eating and talking, and he told my mother three things. He said, "Miss Dixon, I promise you these three things for your son." He said, "I promise I'll make him famous." She said, he told him, "I'll make him rich." She said, "And one of the most important thing of all, I'll make him a good man, somebody you can be proud of."
Wow.
"And if I have a problem with it, I'll call you, Miss Dickerson." And she
was
sold.
That.
She was sold. Yep, she was sold. And then that's how I wound up at SMU.
Wow. Beautiful story. So, awesome. E.D., man, we got to know each other back in the early 2000s, and we've stayed in touch. What are you up to these days, man? I see you were in Cabo. You're talking with Ezekiel Elliott. That's awesome stuff. What are you doing these days?
Man, I'm like a Jamaican slave. I got 50 jobs, man. I'm serious. Man, I'm with FS1 right now. You know, I'm the vice president of business development with the Ram. You know, I got a radio show. You know, if y'all got anything I can do in Denver, I'll come over there and do stuff there too. I
mean, hey, come on over, baby. We always got room for you.
Just let me know. I gotta say this, guys. You know, I never, you know, played against you, Steve. I don't remember.
But, yeah, one time up here in Denver.
Dude, I forgot it. And you probably did so long ago. I've been hit too much. CTE, baby. CTE. Man, I'll tell you this in front of you. Great football player, man. Great football player. But most importantly, a great guy. Man, I just want to say that to you. Great guy. And you're a great football player.
Thank you, man. My much respect for you, too, man. You know, I feel the same way about you, Edie. I appreciate you, brother.
Eric, last one we have for you. Really do appreciate it. Actually, I just wanted to sort of we were talking about running backs during one of the breaks, and Steve was talking about how even today when he like meets former running backs, current running backs, he's all sizing them up and thinking about it from the perspective of when he has to hit them.
Oh, man.
And he was talking about you and saying, man, that guy.
We got to tackle ED? Like, come on, man.
But he just sort of
–
yeah.
Go ahead.
What'd
you say?
Well, I was saying, I was kind of curious about your thoughts on that and sort of if you, you know, I mean, again, you know, that's how Steve views the game. I'm curious about you as well.
Hang on, let me add this to it, though,
okay,
because when you look at a guy like Eric Dixon or Le'Veon Bell, it's like they can make you miss and then they can run you over. So it's the double whammy. When you get guys that you know they can't run you over, you got a lot more confidence. But with ED, man, especially, I was like, oh, man, it was problems. And fortunately, we only faced each other once, so I didn't have to deal with them at one time. But sorry.
Well, man, I'll say this much. When you look at certain guys on defense, it's running back. You know, I would look at certain guys, like I look at Steve, and I was like, man, he's big. Okay, so I don't have to take him head on if I don't have to. But if I have to, I will. But you don't want to. Even though I'm big, I'm 6'3". You know, I was 225 back in those days. You size up your competition. I mean, for me, when I look at backs now, I mean, when they say, oh, he's a big back, I say, oh, he's 5'11". I mean, hell, that's a little bitty back. If you're not over 6'1", 6'2", you're a little back to me.
Right.
But yes, everybody sizes up their competition because you want to know your enemy. I mean, when I first played against the 49ers and I saw Ronnie Lott, I'm like, man, he's not that big. I said, but I kept thinking, I'm not gonna be on their highlight tape.
Right.
Knocked out. So, that's how when you play that game, you have to know your competition.
That's outstanding.
You got a unique blend of like size and that speed, just amazing.
Eric, we really do appreciate your time, man. Today, really great insight. Thank you so much,
man. Appreciate you, bro.
Thanks, Eric.
Yeah. All right, Steve. Take care, man.
All right, talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks again to Eric Dickerson. I mean, he's working with the Rams now, doing a lot of stuff, but tremendous to check in with him. That's a great show we had on Thursday when we had Eric Dickerson and Mike Chappell checking in, talking about they were connected to the Colts, but we weren't really doing a lot of Colts conversation. People really weren't kind of tuned into the skin.
No, not really. And even Eric there was saying how he more identifies with the Rams than he does with the Colts.
Yeah.
But really, really funny stuff. I loved his stuff on the quarterback. We asked him, you know, he's like, well, I've never had a quarterback. And
I'm going back, when he said that, I'm going back through the guys that he played with. I'm like, okay. Vince Ferragamo, Jeff Kemp, Dieter Brock, Steve Dill, Steve Barkowski, Jim Everett for a bit. Then gets to Indy, Jack Trudeau, Chris Chandler, had Jeff George.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had Jay Schrader in with the Raiders for a bit. And then I think he closed with Bobby Hebert in Atlanta. Who's the best one of those guys? At least with him. That's tough.
Yeah.
Because Hebert in Atlanta wasn't the Hebert that was in New Orleans. He wasn't the Cajun Cannon. So, man, I don't know. And Everett was young.
Everett was the first name that sort of popped out there.
But
to
Jim
me.
Everett was just a rookie when he stepped in playing with Eric Dickerson. That's tough, man.
So I can see why he has that opinion.
Yeah.
But he did have still a really good take on it. And I liked the stuff about, you know, vision. He's like, well, I never had vision as a running back. But he just sort of talked about his style. And we got a little bit on Le'Veon Bell there, too, which was really cool.
I can tell you the most talented one of that group was Jeff George.
Yeah.
But I would say probably the best one as a pro, the best one as a pro probably was Chris Chandler or Vince Ferragamo. Both of them got the Super Bowls.
I wonder if he feels that way too.
That'd be a good question. If I'm out in LA and I talk to Eric Dickerson, I'll ask him.
I
would actually bet you if he answered one guy, he would say Ferragamo. That was the first quarterback that he worked with the Rams, and he still had kind of a little bit of sheen left from when he took the Rams to the Super Bowl in 79. So great to catch up with Eric Dickerson, and thank you for joining us, Ryan. Thanks for stepping in for Andy this weekend.
Enjoyed it.
For Ryan Edwards, I'm Andrew Mason. Thanks to our guests. Thanks to you for listening. We'll talk to you next time on the Horse and Round Podcast.